This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Subaru. This spring, we've been sharing stories of real Subaru owners who love their adventure vehicles, as well as test drivers of both the 2021 Subaru Outback Onyx and the Crosstrek Sport. Our host, Gail, got to check out the Subaru Outback and took her own micro-adventure. Hear from her later on about her comfort behind the wheel. Check out the 2021 Subaru Outback Onyx with features like the standard symmetrical all-wheel drive to get you just about anywhere you want to go. Learn more at Subaru.com/Outback.
I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
We can't go in with an agenda and then just present that to other people and expect them to be in line with whatever your vision is. We have to do that with ourselves, too.
Yeah.
You know, that's what this entire process of adapting to having COVID is. That's what we have to do to ourselves sometimes. You know, we just have to take a step back and be like, I know this is what you want. So how can we brainstorm to get you there in some capacity?
This is Lindsay Ingram, a single mom who loves to travel, camp, hike, and garden. She lives in the Midwest with her two teenage sons while balancing her own work and school. In spring of last year, at the very beginning of the COVID-19 lockdown, Lindsay contracted COVID, and she's been dealing with the long-term effects of long-haul COVID ever since. Lindsay's been listening to this podcast for a while now. In fact, I first learned about her experience with COVID through a post she made in our Facebook group back in November, as she was coming to terms with what might be her new normal when it comes to spending time outside. She asked the group, quote, "Those of you who have had to renegotiate your relationships with the outdoors based on illness or other circumstances, what resources, if any, helped you? How'd you do it? Do you come out on the other side with a new form of acceptance with where you are and what that looks like?" Unquote. Over the past year, Lindsay has been renegotiating her relationship with the outdoors, her body, and how she invites others into the outdoors with her. And in certain ways, our conversation is a way to turn her questions around to herself, an opportunity to contemplate her own answers as she navigates the uncertainty of an invisible illness. It's also an opportunity for us to better understand one person's experience living with a chronic illness.
Now we're in a position where we have an entire group of people who are going through this. And how are we as society kind of adapting to that, right?
Before we jump into the past year, let's find out a little bit more about what the outdoors has meant to Lindsay.
I would say that the outdoors have been my saving grace. I know that a lot of people have been on the podcast talking about how being in the outdoors helps with mental health. For me, that is no exception. I spend a lot of time outside centering myself. I have a lot of demands on my plate. And being outside is where my creativity sparks. Being outside alone is where I find my center. I love being in tune with nature. I love giving back, you know, and being a good steward of my little scrap of earth. And just really enjoying the reciprocity that we see in nature. So for me, it's a very therapeutic, healing thing, but also just a core part of my identity. I've been going outside since I was a small child.
You use the words centering yourself, and I imagine that as a single parent that it's hard to find that time for yourself. And I would almost assume that it can feel maybe sometimes hard to give yourself that time.
Yeah. So the journey to giving myself that time without guilt evolved over time. When my kids were very young, I always took them out. When they were 2 and 4, I took them on our first camping trip, just the three of us, which was quite the adventure. We left early. We went to McDonald's for dinner. You know, there's really not a right and wrong when you have kids that young. So when they were very young, incorporating them into my adventures became our adventures. And then it did help that they would go with their dad every other weekend. So I really took advantage of that to really focus on myself. And instead of cleaning the house, I would take a weekend camping trip by myself. As they have gotten older, their interests have shifted and changed. So I've had to make it more of a priority to carve out that time for myself. And I used to feel really guilty about it. Sending the kids to grandma's for a weekend so that mom can go camping when they don't want to go is not something you necessarily hear a lot of moms doing. And our culture tries to make us feel guilty about it. But I existed as a person before I had kids, and my kids are a core part of my identity, but they are not the only part of my identity. And I will still be a whole person when they are out of my house. And so finding this thing that I love and that brings me so much joy is really something that I have learned to be protective of. In a way, it makes me a better mom. It makes me a better person. You know, when I don't go hiking or walking, my kids notice. My son said just last week, he's like, "When is the last time you went hiking?" And I said, "You know, it's been a few weeks." And he's like, "Maybe you should go on a walk tomorrow morning." You know, so they recognize that in me, that that's such an important part of who I am. And we try and celebrate that about each other in this house especially.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Listening to Lindsay talk, I can't help but think of Adventure Mamas, a nonprofit that's dedicated to helping mothers find community and time outside for themselves. I'll link it in the show notes, just like I'll link everything else that we mentioned today. So the outdoors was and continues to be a big part of Lindsay's world, a world that changed drastically last spring.
So I got sick the last week in March. We had just gone into quarantine. My son had been sick the week before, kind of when quarantine was when we were all locking down. So he spent that first week sick, and then I got sick in the second week. We didn't know what it was. I thought maybe it was just going to be a cold. And then I just didn't get better. And so by the end of that first week, I was in the emergency room for the first time.
Wow.
And that was kind of a clue that it wasn't going to be as easy of a journey for me.
Lindsay entered a kind of liminal space that day. She wasn't sick enough to be hospitalized, and there was no testing available for COVID in her area at the time. All the doctors that she talked to then and since then believe she contracted it. She had all the symptoms. But still, without a diagnosis, no certainty.
So I was in this cycle of being too sick to work, being too sick to get out of bed, and going into the emergency room and then being sent home. And we did that for 8 weeks, for 2 months.
Wow.
I did try to go back to work virtually for a few days in the middle of that, and my boss immediately told me to go back to bed. So it was a few weeks in, and it was 2 months of being home on bed rest. And then in the weeks after that, I just did not get better. My symptoms were severe. I don't know if you want me to go into the symptom list, but I will say they were wide-ranging. You know, affecting everything from my breathing to my heartbeat to, you know, my ability to stand and walk across the room. And that persisted for about 5 months through the entire summer.
That must have been really scary.
It was. It was very scary. In addition to being scary, it was very lonely and confusing because we did not have in early March, in April, even into May, we didn't have any science on what this looked like. So we had a lot of misinformation. People were very scared. For the first few weeks that I was ill, my kids had been with their father. And then they came home, but then I couldn't see them for a week or two. Mm. So, you know, we would literally hang out on the other side of my bedroom door because I couldn't see them. I was very fortunate to have a robust support system. You know, we never wanted for anything. I was so overwhelmed with the community that came up and, you know, dropped off care package after care package, but not being able to see anybody, not being able to just get a hug when you're the sickest that you've ever been in your life or give a hug was very, very difficult. And I know, you know, there are people who are hospitalized, there were people who are passed away, but even just being in your home in quarantine at that time, when we didn't know what outcomes were, we didn't know, you know, what a roadmap to recovery looked like. It was very isolating, literally and mentally. Mm-hmm. It was very isolating.
And what was it like not having access to one of your tools for your mental health, you know, to be able to spend time outside?
It felt like an impossible situation. My room is on the second floor. So in those first 6 or 8 weeks, I didn't really come downstairs unless I absolutely had to, because coming back up the stairs was a 10-minute ordeal of sitting on the steps and taking a break, going up 4 more steps and sitting and taking a break. So I tried to really limit that. So my access to the outdoors was very limited, and mentally and even physiologically, you know, it takes a toll on you. Mm. What I did have, and one of my saving graces during that time, was my window stayed open for the entire time that I was in this bedroom being sick. So I welcomed the birds back when they came back in April, and the leaves when they came back in late April. So having my window open was my literal sliver onto the world. And that was one of the things that I would say really got me through that time, was just that little patch of sunlight and listening to the birds and watching the shadows of the trees on my wall.
Do you remember when you went out for maybe more of a nature walk or something that felt akin to a hike that you would have taken before getting sick?
I was down March, April, and May. And at the end of May, I wasn't able to take a walk. But what I was able to do was order flowers. So I ordered some flowers and they were brought to the house. And the boys and I put in a small garden in the front of my house. So kind of sitting on the ground and playing in the dirt was my first real connection to nature after being so sick. And that really carried me through the summer, because I couldn't walk during the summer. And I couldn't hike, but my first hike back was in September, and it was a very short, you know, just down the road and back. It was a very flat surface, but it was phenomenal just to walk to the end of my street and back, you know, and see the grass, you know, so much green. It was calming, even though it was just a city block and back.
Speaking of gardening, before we'd started recording this interview, Lindsay mentioned to me how much of an impact her grandmother, who recently passed away, has had on her relationship with the outdoors, especially when it comes to gardening. I asked Lindsay if she'd tell us a little bit about her grandmother and that connection that she passed on.
I lost my grandmother in January. She was in a nursing home. So her last year of life was difficult. You know, she was isolated. She was alone. We could not see her. And so losing her was devastating. We were very, very close. But gardening is a love that she passed on to not only my mother, but my two sisters and I. Hmm. So we are all avid gardeners. When I was a younger single mom, she would come with her cane and her big knee pads on and a van full of flowers and tell me to start digging. And so I would. I would have to drop whatever I was doing that Saturday and dig a new garden bed. And she taught me, you know, to have fun, to do things by trial and error. She taught me through gardening that you have to be patient. One of her favorite sayings that I know she did not make up, but that flowers sleep for the first year, creep for the second year, and leap for the third year. So one of the ways that I have really connected with the outdoors, especially this spring, is kind of widening my garden beds and setting up a vegetable garden. And I just sort of feel her a little bit every day, and that being patient and that being experimental and doing it for the process of doing it and not necessarily for the outcome. You know, she would always tell me that flowers die, and that's okay. Now you know what not to do next time. And you might do the same thing next time and they thrive. You know, some things are out of your control. And I think that speaks to the uncertainty a lot of us are feeling. But, you know, being that resilient and adapting and just focusing on the joy and the process is really something I carry with me in my relationship with the outdoors as we kind of go forward. You know, I can garden, I can take walks, I can sit outside, I can do so many things. And that to me is worth so much, even if I will not be hiking up any large mountains anytime soon.
Though Lindsay has always been a hiker who enjoys the process more than the outcome, she describes herself as the person you'd find on the side of the trail, knees in the dirt to get a photo of a mushroom. This time has not come without big challenges. There's still a lot of uncertainty, a continual renegotiation of what activities are possible, a changing relationship with one's body, and hard looks at accessibility in her life and the lives of others. We'll jump back in after the break.
This episode of She Explores is brought to you by Real Paper. Real's toilet paper and paper towels are made of 100% bamboo, making it the most sustainable, eco-friendly option on the market. But just because sustainability is top of mind doesn't mean you have to sacrifice when it comes to comfort. We were curious, though. How does bamboo paper really feel compared to what we already know?
Hey, Tori.
Hey, Gail. I hear you got some real paper in the mail to try out. How's that treating you?
Oh, you know, I like it. I wasn't really sure what to expect from bamboo toilet paper, but I love that it's super strong and quilted, so it's soft, too. Before this call, I was thinking about it. Its strength gives it this extra layer of sustainability. I've learned through this partnership that bamboo takes a lot less energy to produce than trees. And since real paper is really durable, I use less too. So it's a win-win from a sustainability standpoint.
I hadn't thought of that. Delivered to your door before you need it, and with no difference in quality between bamboo and traditional paper you already know, real paper is the best toilet paper for both you and the planet. Visit realpaper.com and use the code EXPLORE at checkout for 25% off your first order. That's R-E-E-L paper.com, code EXPLORE for 25% off.
I got to test drive the Outback Onyx. The first thing I noticed was the color. It's called Autumn Green Metallic, and it fits perfectly with the soft blues and textured browns of winter in New England.
Gail got to take the Subaru Outback Onyx out for a micro-adventure around her home state of New Hampshire. And while the colors complemented her nearby nature, it was the sensations behind the wheel that really made the drive special.
You know, usually it feels awkward to get behind the wheel of a new car. You have to get to know it before it feels comfortable, like it feels second nature to you. But with the Outback, I felt at home right away and just got that excited feeling in my stomach, like I was about to go somewhere good. The feeling can be out of touch right now, so getting to tap into that, it felt extra good.
Discover the 2021 Outback Onyx at Subaru.com/Outback. Go where love takes you.
We're back. One of the things that you mentioned when we chatted last was that through your experience with long-haul COVID, you've renegotiated, you continue to renegotiate your relationship with the outdoors and how you spend time outside. Would you be able to speak to that a little bit, like your thought process around that?
One thing that I had to do was acknowledge that my situation was miserable, right? I think whenever we go through something where we aren't able to do things that we once were able to do, or feels like something is taken away, there is a sense of inherent unfairness in that. And it's okay for it to be miserable. But at some point, anytime I've encountered a block like that and given myself space to feel it, there's been a need to pivot and adapt, because I don't want to stew in that forever. And I think there's a difference between holding space for something and then wallowing. That marker is different for everybody, but for me, I did hit a point where I wanted to pivot and turn and say, well, I can't go backpacking. I can't, you know, do my weekly hike or my, you know, multiple times a week hikes. So what can I do? And it turned into a more of a positive mindset of being able to look at, okay, you know, here are the things that I can do. And here are the ways that I can connect. So for me, that became gardening. For me, that became sitting out in my back patio and listening to the birds and watching the squirrels scamper. I think, like a lot of people, I have the squirrels in my backyard named now. Or maybe that's just me, but I do have them named. But really, it's just looking at that positive, you know, what can I do versus what can't I do or what's not accessible to me. So for me, the path forward was, you know, really, I mean, as simple as making a list of here are the things that I can do and being very intentional of going out and doing those things, even when I didn't feel like it or I thought it was going to be too much, trying to go out and do that. So that meant going to the nature park and walking the quarter mile short trail and then sitting on a bench and listening for an hour. And that's kind of what I do now. I try and do that every week. Just going to a park and walking, you know, halfway as far as I think I can and sitting down on the dirt and getting my hands on the ground and really just being quiet and listening, because that's how I can connect right now. It is still hard for me a year later to go uphill.
How has your relationship with your body shifted, and how are you able to kind of build up some trust in your body?
That is a phenomenal question. I think when someone's injured or when you get sick, I felt betrayed by my body for a long time. I was like, you used to be able to do all these things and now you can't. And is it some moral failing on my part? You know, and so some of that anger was directed inward, which is not healthy, but it's where I was for a long time. And so shifting that to gratitude plays a central role in my life, right? I practice gratitude every day. I'm not going to say I'm a silver linings person, because I think sometimes things are just allowed to be terrible. But seeking out things that I'm grateful for, kind of keeping a running list, is one of those things that just helps keep my mindset more positive. So I started doing that with my body. You know, just thank you for carrying me up the stairs. Thank you for being able to go to the park. Thank you for driving me. Just those very little thank yous started shifting that anger away. And the other big part of it is taking better care of myself. This looks different for everybody, but for me, there were some small lifestyle changes I could make, you know, making sure I'm hydrated, making sure I'm on a sleep schedule. Not that I can single-handedly facilitate healing, but I can certainly make it easier on myself, if that makes any sense. I'm not a person who says foods are good and bad, but, you know, making sure or trying to eat more whole foods or fruits and vegetables, things that are going to nourish me. So yeah, just practicing that gratitude, trying to treat my body with kindness and compassion the way that I would any of my friends.
Did it make you think about accessibility differently?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I will share that I actually apologized to one of my friends after I got sick because our kids are the same age. We, you know, kind of raised them up together. And that included going on a lot of hikes when they were very young. You know, we lived next door to each other. Her kids are my kids. And there was a time in our lives when, you know, I was used to hiking and that wasn't something she was used to. And so I would kind of speed ahead with the kids a little bit. And we would always wait for her to catch up. But the very early, late 20s, early 30s me just didn't really think about how that might make her feel. You know, I think we take it for granted. Personally, I would like to think that, you know, I have that compassion, but I didn't in that circumstance. And there's nothing like, you know, looking at a path and wanting to go up it and not being able to, that really resets your mindset. I think about it in the way that, why doesn't this path have, you know, a wheelchair accessible thing? But I didn't think about it as much as I do now.
Yeah. How did your friend respond when you apologized?
You know, she said, that's okay. She said, I'm sorry that you know what that feels like now. But it's okay. And, you know, we've been friends for 20 years. We have the sort of relationship where, you know, we have a lot of grace for each other, even though we're in different places in our lives. A lot of our worldviews are different, but she accepted my apology with grace and compassion, which is more than I could ask for, really.
She sounds like a good friend.
She really is.
So what has community looked like for you? Have you found and connected with other people who are experiencing long-haul COVID symptoms?
Yes. So that was one of the weirdest things about going through this last year, was that profound sense of loneliness. And I thought it was just me going through this and doctors couldn't explain it and there was no treatment. And one of my good friends forwarded a New York Times article to me in May. And it was the first time that a voice was given to my experience. And I think that we go through this a lot. Like, we go through something, we are very internal. We feel that loneliness, and it's when your story connects with other people's stories that you find that sense of community. And for me, I cried so hard over that New York Times article. But it was the first time that we saw, you know, that other people were going through this, you know, kind of months of suffering and vague symptoms, and nobody knew what it was. And the word long hauler hadn't been coined yet. But in that article, there were support groups springing up online for other people going through this. So I limit my time in these two particular groups that I'm in, because having this and this being a part of my life is something that's kind of shaped my last year. But like motherhood, it's not the only part of who I am. You know, I have a lot going on. But at times, being in that support group it's like holding up a mirror to your own experience. It's just online. There's really not anything in person. You know, we are still in the middle of a pandemic, but just having other people to say, hey, this is a thing that I'm going through. Does anyone have anything that aligns with this? Or just pointing resources to each other has been really key to kind of mentally moving forward.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you want people who are listening to know about long-haul COVID? You know, what it's like, or any misconceptions that you've encountered that you'd like to correct?
I would say that everyone experiences things differently. it's very strange when your lived experience has been politicized in the way that this has. And sometimes that's very hard. And so if you know somebody who is going through this, don't politicize it for them. You know, your friend who has long haul COVID isn't making it up for attention. And your friend who has long haul COVID isn't obligated to share their story if they don't want to spread awareness.
Mm.
I think there's pressure either way to dismiss or pressure to share your story and, you know, really get that out there. There was especially last spring and fall and summer. It's the same things we hear about other people who are going through things, right? Or other people who have experiences. I'm not an ambassador for everyone who has COVID just because I've had COVID. So if I want to share my story, I will. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're entitled to everything that my doctors are telling me. And I think that it comes from a place of genuine concern. You know what I mean? You care about somebody. But that's true for anyone with a chronic illness. You know, you can give advice that they've probably heard 40 or 50 times before and they are tired of hearing it. So yeah, just give people some courtesy and some grace. You know, the same courtesy and grace that you would want to be treated with if you were in the same situation.
This past year has been a good reminder to listen to others' experiences and respect boundaries, whether it's with long-haul COVID, other chronic illnesses, or accessibility and mobility needs. As we continued our conversation, Lindsay brought it back to understanding that accessibility and negotiation is a part of life and relationships. Creating more opportunities in the outdoors, as well as meeting people where they're at, has become a central theme for Lindsay.
I would say, circling back to the idea of reciprocity, you know, a wonderful way that I have found to connect with the outdoors is to share it with other people and to make it accessible for other people. One of the things that I did a few months ago when there was still snow on the ground was I bought little Explore day packs for my friend's daughters. They're like nieces to me. And they had binoculars in them and little magnifying glasses and some crayons that I had taken the wrappers off for like rubbing on bark and whistles and little compasses. And so we just went to the same nature park. We play a game called, you know, left or right. And just at every trail that we stop at, you know, every junction, they get to pick left or right. And so the kids get to pick what way we go. The kids get to be around nature. You know, they get to pick up leaves and explore them. They get to do rubbings against wood or a plant. You know, they're using their binoculars to look at birds. Instilling the love for that kind of presence and being still is one of the things that drives me. And I love doing this with pretty much every little kid in my life. At some point, they will go on a hike with me and get that little day pack. But even when you can't do the things that you want to do, sharing what you can do with someone else and sharing what really matters to you with someone else makes such a profound difference, right? You're creating that memory with someone. You're creating a connection with someone that you can then carry forward, and maybe they will then share that thing with someone else. So that's one of my favorite things about the outdoors is that reciprocity and sharing it with other people and trying to give back in my little circle in any way that I can.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Obviously, I take my kids, but also my kids' friends camping or hiking back when they thought that was a cool thing to do with their mom. You know, they don't so much now, but that's okay. They will again. I hope. So we'll see. Because I did, you know, instill this love of the outdoors with my kids. We go on these long, you know, 6,000 mile road trips across the country to national parks. You know, and right now they are in a season in their lives where this is just not a thing that interests them. And I spent a while fighting against that. You know, sometimes we share the things we love with people we love, and they just give a big peace out to that idea. And it's really easy to take that personally, but just honoring that about people, you know, if they don't want to share that with you, it's still a thing that you can do by yourself. You can go on a hike by yourself. You know, you can do things alone as much as you can do them with other people. So I would say, you know, look at the barriers and see if you can adapt to those barriers or overcome them. Mm. Whether it's a fear of being alone or, you know, that you aren't physically able to do the things that you ideally would want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So just as, you know, an anecdote for me would be going away with my sister for a couple of days. She works on her feet all the time as a server. And she was like, no hikes. You know, I know her. So I also knew that she would love to see some beautiful things. So we ended up doing more of those quarter mile, half mile to the lookout point waterfall kind of hikes. And we met in the middle. You know, we both got to enjoy it, and we were kind of flexible for each other and accommodating for each other. And that's a good reminder too. You know, it calls back to your apology to your friend.
We can't go in with an agenda and then just present that to other people and expect them to be in line with whatever your vision is. We have to do that with ourselves too.
Yeah.
You know, that's what this entire process of adapting to, you know, having COVID is. But what a beautiful sentiment that you know your sister so well that you knew that she would want to be outside in some aspect. So you found a way to share that with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we have to do to ourselves sometimes. You know, we just have to take a step back and be like, I know this is what you want. So how can we brainstorm to get you there in some capacity?
Just as Lindsay is meeting other people where they're at, she's trying to do the same for herself as she moves through the effects of long-haul COVID. And as we all move through this time, as restrictions are lifted here in the United States, I'd encourage you to stay respectful and considerate of others, on the trail and otherwise. As Lindsay continues to recover, she told me that she's looking forward to this summer, to a road trip to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. In fact, she shared that just the act of planning a road trip is very calming for her, something she looks forward to. So, in the spirit of looking ahead, I'll leave you with Lindsay's last thoughts.
I would just encourage anyone, whatever your abilities are, whatever your resources are, you know, you can travel very cheaply. And I know that traveling in any way is a privilege, but wherever you live, you know, you have a window, you have access to the outdoors, and that can look like a walk, you know, in your neighborhood. It can look like, you know, a drive if you have a car. But the outdoors is there for all of us to enjoy and to give back to.
Thank you so much to Lindsay Ingram for taking the time to talk and for her willingness to share her unique experiences. You can find her on Instagram at hikeovercountry or via her website, hikeovercountry.com. She encourages other long haulers and anyone else who wants to reach out. I've linked the New York Times article that Lindsay mentioned, as well as Adventure Mamas and other resources in the show notes and via the episode landing page at she-explorers.com. Lindsay also generously provided the full contents of the Kids Adventure Pack, which I really want to try out with my niece. Thanks to our sponsors, Subaru and Real Paper. You can find She Explores on social media, our website, and wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Instagram at Gail Straub. If you enjoy listening, there are different ways to support us. You can subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. And if you'd like to connect, join us in the She Explores podcast Facebook group. Music in this episode is licensed through MusicBed. This episode was edited by Julie Hotz and produced by me, Gail Straub. She Explores is a production of Ravel Media, released on Wednesdays. We're off next week, and we'll be back on June 9th. Until then, stay curious.